It now gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker for tonight, Billy from District 52, Santa Maria.
My name is Billy. I'm an alcoholic.
Billy.
I want to welcome Christina, Michelle, Shane, Jeff, and John to Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe you've been here before. I'm quite sure you're here now, at least physically. And I'm here physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And I think first thing I want to share, it's so cool because I know that whatever I share, that's what I shared. When I'm going to go 45 minutes, and or more than likely, but I won't go over. And unless it's a standing ovation for an encore. But anyhow, one thing I want to point out, first of all, is not only life, but sobriety is come as you are, okay? If I had to be this, that, or that, and that, and that to be here, then I wouldn't be here. Okay, I'm a third edition alcoholic. And by that I mean I never had withdrawal symptoms. I wasn't that kind of drinker. I'll get to that in my story, but most of all, I wanted to share about how it's come as you are, because when I was sitting there thinking, I have these cards in my pocket and a picture's worth a thousand words, and it saved me a whole lot of time talking about what it was like. And I thought, I'm going to have to get up here and then pass it around. And when I heard, you know, they're doing the seventh tradition right now, it's like, you know, that really floated my boat. Then second is I didn't have any water with me while I was eating in a hurry. And here's water. And Karen read my mind and set my mind at ease. It's really cool. It's like to be thirsty is human. And I think I'm going to start out with my water metaphor. I've studied a bit about water. And there's molecules, and there's atoms, and electrons, and protons, and neutrons. And the electrons in a hydrogen atom, there's one. And it goes around the nucleus 1,357 miles per second. In an oxygen atom, there's 8. And they're all going 1,357 miles per second around the nucleus, okay? So in a molecule, there's 2 hydrogen and 1 oxygen. So there's 10 electrons going 1,357 miles per second around the nucleus. And that's not miles per hour, that's miles per second. And there's people that know this stuff. With that setup, a snowflake has a quintillion molecules. So that if you add up the electrons, there's 10 quintillion electrons going 1,357 miles per second around the nucleus in a snowflake, okay? So you can imagine what's going on in your hair right now, or your fingernails, your cell phone, this and that and the other thing, okay? Okay, if I had to understand that, and the electromagnetic forces and the heat transfer properties of water that a steam engine can make it drive and so on, if I had to understand all that to hydrate myself, I would die. Right? Okay. So, it is absurd on its face. God, as we understood him, we can understand like this much, and that's a lot. I understand infinite, eternal, love with capital L. Now, I'm not going to be preaching. I'm going to be sharing some interesting viewpoints, right? I understand a fraction. And infinite means everywhere, which is right here, right now, and eternal is always. I might not be connected in my mind with my higher power, but my higher power is always present, the way I experience it. And love with capital L. There's, you know, I grew up in a religion, and I just want to emphasize, understanding can just be like a grain of sand in the ocean, and that's a good starting point. The idea that anyone would have, you know, that you have to have a perfect understanding of God to hydrate your spirit is absurd on its face, okay? I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I believed that you guys knew how to stay sober, and I had disdain for God if there was a God before I got sober. God was some kind of a joke. The love of my life had drowned in a storm 20 months earlier. My mom stopped by my workshop and said, hey, we noticed you haven't been happy for a while. Would you see this therapist? And I saw this therapist, and at the time I was doing leather work and I had a workshop in downtown Santa Barbara. It was a half a block from the liquor store, Radio Square Liquors, and I swore off drinking every morning. And by sometime later in the day, I headed on down to the liquor store again. And when I drank, I kept on going. The physical craving kicked in. So anyhow, I saw this therapist about this woman that drowned, and got to share my grief. And she said, would you see me next week and don't drink till you see me? Like my parents, my mom had dialed her in that I have, you know, alcohol too. Anyhow, I said yes. And where before I would quit drinking in the morning because of the night before, later on in the day, it would be like, it's Miller time. I remember so clearly walking back to the liquor store in late afternoon or whatever, and it's like, oh no, not again. And then walking back, oh yes, one more time, you know. And it's like, that's how my alcoholism was. It was really lightweight, but nevertheless, because of the third tradition, I'm here. And I'm here for so many good reasons. But anyhow, so this therapist, after sharing my grief, she said, would you see me next week and don't drink till you see me? And I was able to. That same energy that I quit in the morning, was able to hold it all day long because I told this person, I'll see you next week and I won't drink till I see you. And I had dropped out of life. I had four sisters on the day I was born, eight sisters by the time I was 6 years old, and then my brother came along. There's a big Catholic family in Seattle. My dad was a traveling salesman. I was a man in the house a lot, and that was kind of hard, and gave me purpose. Having so many sisters, it was like, you know, they're always trying to figure this out or figure that, and I'm standing on the sidelines because you can't get into a conversation, right? And I can see what they're talking about, and I can figure it out what to do. And so then, I'm really good at being in the present and figuring out what to do, and so on. Gosh, another side note, I hope I'm not talking too fast, and I'm hoping it's not too many gyrations from this to that to that. But I want to share, in my drinking days, so big Catholic family, when I was 10 or 11, my dad taught me how to make stovetop fudge off the Hershey's can, chocolate fudge or chocolate with peanut butter in it, right? And that was the age of 11. That ties in directly to that fudge over there. My sobriety date's October 2nd, 1984. Last October 2nd, I celebrated a year sober for the 40th time in a row. And when I was a year or two or 3 years sober, God, or my higher power, and I'm going to use the word God, and I'm not pushing it on anyone, whatever. I have a friend in Santa Maria, she calls her higher power Poppy. You know, whatever, you know, to express yourself. There's one time early in sobriety I used the F-bomb, and I'm not going to use the F-bomb here tonight, by the way, but I will be using the J-bomb in a minute. But there was one time in sobriety, I was outside and said, what the F is going on, to God? But it was an honest prayer, because I was willing to have the answer to that question. So however you speak to your higher power, however you speak, to say thank you, to be able to say thank you is a really good thing, or God, please help me, or please help me, or help. But at some point, to be able to say thank you. And I'm just going to go on wherever it goes. I apologize that it's kind of here and there and everywhere, but I learned to say thank you. And I learned, it's like, oh God. Let me tie these ends together.
We're with you, Billy. We're good.
Okay. So when I got to my first meeting, it was the Men's Sag, Tuesday Stag in Santa Barbara at the Trinity Episcopal Church. 4 months later, I was the secretary of it. It was in the church library, and it was a smoking meeting. And the windows were closed. And you remember what I said about being someone who can be in the present and figure things out? So instantly, the windows were open and I had fans in there to blow the air out. As secretary, I was able to bring that to life. And I didn't have a sponsor that said, hey, figure this out or whatever. It's just God said, figure this out, you know, see this, do this. I like to share, when life puts something in front of you, you know, like the opportunity to be sober and to do life a different way than being bound to alcohol. I like to, I made notes and it's like, I'm so glad I don't have my notes, because they would just slow me down so bad. Because everything I'm sharing with you is true for me, okay? And I'm free. There's one time I was driving to my brother's house in Simi Valley, and Pink Floyd's Wish You Were Here was playing on the radio. And there's a line in there that says, did you exchange a walk-on part in the war for a lead role in a cage? And I didn't hear it right. I thought it said, would you exchange a walk-on part in life for a lead role in a cage? And when I got to my brother's, I looked it up, okay? Every one of us in this room was born with a walk-on part in life, okay? We pee, we poop, we whine, we smile, we laugh, we gurgle, you know, whatever. And then we get to be in a few months old and we start to try to crawl or whatever. And all this stuff is just our walk-on part. Life gives this to us to bring to life, you know, from the get-go. And I call that a walk-on part, okay? And lots of people are raised with love and encouragement and, wow, he's talking, say the number is 1 to 10, you know, all this encouragement kind of stuff or whatever. And they flourish and they grow and they are encouraged. Oh, wow, look at that. And the kid shows their interest in something and they encourage it and so on. And these people become who they are. And then other people experience abuse or isolation. I had a lot of isolation. So many sisters, I got locked in my room. So many times they had a hook lock on the outside, but I got locked in my room so many times they put a hook lock on the inside to lock them out. And on the other hand, I mean, we love each other. I was thinking of, I should call one of my sisters to say, hey, I'm talking right now. What do you got to say? I'll put you on the speaker. But that would be a little bit too far. But anyhow, with abuse, with a overstack of materialism or envy or jealousy, I got my dress shoes on with my dress shoelaces. You know, they're my hiking boots with my yellow shoelaces that don't match, and so on. But anyhow, so there's all kinds of things that bind people up. And alcohol we got in common, and drugs, other things that might be part of the picture, okay? And so each of us, if you're here because of alcohol, you got here because you had a lead role in a cage. And through the 12 steps, we get a walk-on part in life. And it's as simple as that. The steps were written in 1939. The therapist, when I saw her the second time, I'm just pausing to love my God, love my higher power, because my spirit's getting fed, and I know your spirit's getting fed. And it's not me. You know, it's letting it flow. So that was written in 1939. Okay, my therapist gave me a book to read called Under the Influence, and it was written in 1981, 42 years later, okay? And she said, and this is the next week, you know, we shared, the woman friend, her name was Laura, and she's the love of my life to this day. There's women I've been interested in, and women that have been interested in me, but I haven't been interested in the ones that were interested in me, and they haven't been interested, and you know, all that stuff. So I'm single to this day. But the point is, I saw her the next week, and I hadn't drank for a week, and she gave me this book to read called Under the Influence. And we talked about alcohol, and she said, would you read this book, and would you see me next week, and don't drink till you see me? And I said, yes. And I read that book, and I've got one or two copies in the trunk if anyone wanted to borrow one and pass it around this group or whatever. But it's the scientific basis of what the doctor's opinion says. The doctor's opinion says we believe that there's an allergy. The alcoholic is not a normal drinker. They have something with their physiology that if they have a drink, the craving kicks in and they keep on going, okay? And I got to read that. And it also talked about how alcoholism is progressive. Like if the big book was written today, it wouldn't say the doctor's opinion. It'd be the same doctor that wrote it, so to speak. But it wouldn't say the doctor's opinion. It would say, this is alcoholism, okay? So if you have this physiology, for me, it helped a lot to just see that, to say yes or no to that. I don't sponsor a whole lot. I try to guide here and there. I'm helpful in all kinds of ways. I bring to life what my higher powers gives me to bring to life. When I take someone through the first step, to me, it's a three-part question, true or false, three times. Do you have this physiology that if you have a drink, a craving is going to kick in? True or false? Okay? Second, given where alcohol takes you, is it insane to drink? Is it insane? Like that physical condition, it's not a problem. I'm going to go quick sidetrack. Along the way, I learned to identify problems as having solutions. A circumstance that's disturbing, troubling or just challenging. If there's a solution, like there's all kinds of stuff outside these doors that's really disturbing and challenging and so on and so forth. Now, that's enough said on that. With all that stuff going on, it's either a problem or it's a condition, okay? If there's a solution for something, it's a problem. Any problem anyone ever had and has now or ever will have, they all have one thing in common, without which it's not a problem, and that's a solution, okay? So when I saw that, this whole array of problems I was facing became a whole adventure of solutions. I had no idea what they were going to be. And that's, to me, that's fundamental in my life viewpoint, okay? So if something does not have a solution, it's a condition, okay? So my alcoholic physiology is a condition. There's no surgery. We'll clip this in your liver and now you can just drink like a man. No, you know? So my alcohol, my physiology is a condition. Okay, now the coolest thing is that my alcohol, before I get to my alcoholic thinking, so true, I have this condition, my physiology, okay? Second is, would it be insane? Would it be insane for me to ignore my condition, okay? Having this condition, would it be insane for me to ignore it? True. Okay. Did I continually ignore it to my peril of relationships, peril of others, and so on? True. Okay. Three truths, and that's the end of your first step. Just be honest about it. Just lock into that. I was locked into that when I got here. I had no, the thing about life being unmanageable, I grew up in the Catholic background, and I had a background idea. I mean, I had disdain for God by the time I got to AA. But I had an unbreakable, unshakable love of God and love of life as a child growing up. And so the idea of a person managing their life to me is kind of foreign on its face. It's like show up and be and bring to life what you're given to bring. It's not this checklist of, oh, I got to be like this person, I got to have this and that and so on and so forth. And, you know, I have enough money in the bank to get through June 15th or June 20th, you know? I have work, I have resources and so on that trickle in, and when I put my mind to it, it will resolve debt that I have that's up to my neck. I have resources up to the sky, like bringing that fudge to life one of these days. But anyhow, so that's a step one, okay? Now step two, and I believe that you guys knew how to stay sober when I got here. I had that belief. So if anyone in here would say, I don't believe nothing, then, you know, you're welcome to that. But that's a lead role in a cage, okay? A person in a walk-on park has a belief in something, okay? I believe. This will quench my thirst. Simple as that. Okay, I'm going to tell you my morning prayer before I get to step two. In the morning, I'm on my knees. Thanks, Lee kind of gave me that guidance. And early in sobriety, with that willingness to grow along spiritual lines that it mentions in portion of chapter 5, there was a couple of times, once when Mormons and once when Jehovah's Witnesses stopped by my front door, can we come in and study the Bible with you or whatever? And I was willing to grow along spiritual lines, and they came on in. And I saw each one of them maybe once or maybe twice, whatever. But they said, can we pray? I said, sure. And they always prayed with thank you, starting out with thank you, okay? And so it's like, my prayers always start with thank you. Well, actually, good morning, God. And I have lots of other words I use, creator, Lord of life, source of life, life, good morning, life, you know, whatever. And thank you for the gift of life, sobriety, Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, and each and every path to your peace, your joy, and your love. And I can't see that clock very well. Okay, good. When are we going to 8:10? Pardon?
Eight-ish.
Eight-ish?
Eight-ish.
So no 45 minutes. Okay.
Whatever.
Okay. I might go a little past 8, if it's okay. Thank you for each and every path to your peace, your joy, and your love is acknowledging validity in anybody's spiritual life. Okay, I got mine, you're welcome to have yours, and I don't hold anybody's against them, as if it helps them, one, be sober, two, be human. Three, to have a walk-on part in life. You know, if your spiritual life is helping you have a walk-on part in life, you get up in the morning and what can I bring to life today? I'm going to go to step two, and I might catch up where I was. I can't remember, but it's okay. And I'm not sure if I mentioned I had brain damage on my way here. In growing up in the family I grew up in, and then we moved to Santa Barbara. I graduated high school in 67. Vietnam War was going full tilt. I was had the top SAT score in the high school. I had a student body president. I was thinking I'm going to marry my high school sweetheart, make babies, and figure out life as you go along. And in the midsummer, I mean, with a week's notice or whatever, I'm moving to Florida. She moved to Florida. Her dad got a PhD at UCSB, got a job at Florida State, and boom. And there was, you know, my dream gone and stuff. And actually, I went out and saw her over the Christmas holiday in 67, 68. And her birthday was March 11th. And by March 11th, I was drinking, I was smoking pot, and I called her on her birthday. She wanted to join a sorority. And I thought some fraternity guy is going to sweep her off her feet. And I cussed her out on her birthday, and we didn't talk for 7 years after that. I just blew it out of the water. But anyhow, so I wound up having my physical for the draft for the Vietnam War. I passed it. I got a telegram from the Marine Corps. It said, we're going to, you know, you're going to get drafted by the Army on Monday, so join the Marines now. And so Monday I went down to Selective Service. I applied for Conscientious Objector. It took about a year. I got it. With that classification, if I got drafted, I would do alternative service like medical or whatever. And I was in the first draft lottery in 1970. And they drafted, you know, each birthday got a number, and they drafted to 195, and I was 199. So I missed the lottery, missed the draft. I tore up my draft card, sent it to the president with the letter, and there was not an ounce of anything in me to, wow, I'm free now, I can go get a career, I can become an accountant or a lawyer, or a, you know, accountants are great, but whatever, or build a family or make a life for myself while all my brothers and cohorts are heading over to Vietnam. So I just checked out. I went on strike. Along the way, being on strike, alcohol helped a lot, and pot helped a lot. And three times I did LSD, and the third time was really bad, and that was the end of that. But one of those times, this friend had a little inhaler with stuff called amyl nitrate, and I took a whiff of that. And it's like, wow, you know, you're in heaven for like a minute, and then come back down, okay? Well, the next thing I know, we're going to get a pint bottle, and it's $50, and it's mine, and I got this pint bottle. And to me, that longing to have a spiritual connection, you know, connected with God, heaven now, okay, I will. I would kill myself right now if I could come back in 2 weeks just because I need a vacation, right? But anyhow, so I'm whiffing on this open pint bottle, and I'm just feeling like memories just flying out the window and so on. And I felt myself going into a really dark space. And I felt like I'm going into, like I'm going to wind up in a corner in a psych ward institution somewhere, sucking my thumb for the rest of my life. And I called out Jesus, which is the name I knew growing up of my higher power. And I called out Jesus, and I came right out of it, okay? And I was probably 25 or 30 years sober when I realized that I had significant brain damage from that. You know, I'm so much better than I was. Gosh almighty, so much to share. I made notes, I'm not gonna read from it, but I am gonna refresh my memory. When I was checked out, when I was on strike, I remember there's one time I was sitting on a rock, and it was on a Saturday, but in my life in those days, every day was a Saturday. And it occurred to me from my Catholic upbringing, you have to lose your soul to find your soul. And more than anything, I wanted to find my soul. And so I had to lose my soul to find my soul. That gave me total license to get as wasted as I could. Okay. And another time sitting on a rock, come on, Billy, don't space out, sitting on the other rock. Oh yeah, it crossed my mind, I'm an alcoholic. It was not alarming to me at all. It would just explain things. And this is really critical stuff, especially for people that have been sober a while. There's a woman on the East Coast. This is my big book, right? Alcoholics Anonymous, da-da-da-da-da. Some of you have seen this. I bought it on thriftbooks.com. Lots of phone numbers. Y'all happen to be Southern California. Turn the next page, and it's upside down, which is me. You know? Anyhow. Oh, this gets even better. I have these birthday cards in here. This this little kid with a helmet pushing a little kiddie's shopping cart in the sand. He took the road less traveled, but he brought a helmet and a tiny shopping cart, and that made all the difference. No one travels through life quite like you. Happy birthday. This is from one of my sisters. And this is a really smoky cat. Cat just blew out a whole bunch of candles. So another year, another blaze of glory. All right. Okay, so this is critical. And there was a woman on the East Coast. I host a Zoom meeting for the Palestine Institute of Biodiversity. And through a connection there, I wound up at this other site for, I forget the name of it, which was like for artists and writers and stuff like that. And I thought there'd be like 200 people there, and I went to that on, it's a Saturday at noon. And I get there and there's like six people or something. So we each identified, and I always have my name with the phone number if I'm on a Zoom. And I get a call a few days later from one of the people that was there, and she was in a rage. She had broken up with her girlfriend and thought she could talk to me because I'm 12 steps. And I shared with her, and this is critical too, I shared with her about, you know, you got a resentment, and with the resentment, you know, the first aid initial thing for resentment is, God, please give so-and-so an abundance of your grace in their life. I have compassion for them. They're in their shoes 24/7. From that, I learned to have compassion for myself. I'm in my shoes 24/7. And forgiveness 100%, as I am forgiven. So that's first thing up when there's rage, anger, resentment, whatever. Okay, and she heard that and she calmed down. A couple days later, she was in a homicidal, suicidal rage. And I said, you know, if you like, I'll be happy to take you through the 12 steps. Okay, now, in the big book, and this has been on my mind for decades, I'm sober 4 decades, and from early, in the first paragraph, the forward to the first edition, the last sentence says, and besides, we're sure that our way of living has its benefits, advantages for all. And on page 164, which I really locked into, probably from my Catholic upbringing, whatever, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. And God has constantly disclosed more to me and to us. Okay? I promise I was not going to use the F-bomb, but I'm going to use the J-bomb a few times. I did it twice already, and I'm going to tell you that when I was about 10 years sober, this guy, and it took me till I was 35 years sober. I got back to the church for 6 months right before the pandemic. Hopefully I get a chance to share that. It's about a minute, but I was about 10 years sober, and this guy who was kind of practicing Christian, whatever, he wanted to kind of convict me on something like, what do you believe? You know, and so he says, and don't run out of the room because I'm going to use the word Jesus. But he said, do you believe Jesus did miracles? Because this is really pertinent. Do you believe Jesus did miracles? And I'm like, and when I was 8 years sober, I saw the word only in 11 steps. So since I'm always looking to God for the answer, right? And so I'm like, you mean like walking on water? And he says, yeah, do you believe Jesus walked on water? And I said, well, I believe he walked where he needed to walk. I believe he had a fit spiritual condition. I believe he prayed only for knowledge of God's will, and when he had it, that he counted on having the power to carry it out. And it's really not relevant if he walked on water or not. What matters is he walked where he needed to walk. But for an alcoholic, being sober is no less a miracle than walking on water. Okay? So hats off to all of you that are sober today or willing to be sober. This is miracle stuff. You'll hear people at meetings say, we don't walk on water, and that's BS. I walk on water every day, you know? Our inner life, I have a walk-on part in life. I don't have a lead role in cage. Oh yeah, they said, no, we don't walk on water. No, monkey see, monkey do. No, I walk on water. You tell them, next year you're going to hear it, Billy walks on water. You know, you can learn to walk on water. That's what a lead role in a walk-on part in life is, okay? So, it was on my mind for a long time. What's the universal first step? Okay, like this woman that called. She had been raped repeatedly by her dad. I don't want to identify her too personally, but the point is that stuff like this happens to lots of people, okay? And that anger and rage that she held and so on interfered with the relationship, all this kind of stuff. And by this time, I'd had a conversation with Peter P. I had chapter 3 open with him, and here's the punchline. So I'm going to read the first paragraph and the line. I'm going to go a minute or two over. I hope it's okay. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. False, not true for me. I'm an alcoholic. That explained it. I had no issues with that. Okay, no person likes to think he's bodily, mentally different from his fellows. I never had a thought like that, you know? I just wasn't thinking that way. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. I wondered why other people didn't drink like me. You know? Okay? Okay. The idea, and I'm not dissing this, okay? I'm saying this did not apply to me. This is really important. If it applies to you, pay attention, you know? That's what's in here. There's so much genius in this book. But that didn't apply to me, okay? The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. No, I swore it off every day, okay? The next three sentences. The last two sentences of the first paragraph and the first sentence of the second paragraph are central because the universal first step, where the 12 steps, like in the forward to the first edition, that last sentence in the first paragraph, it says, and besides, we believe this can benefit anyone. Okay, the way I see it, World War I had gone on. There was a Great Depression. World War II was brewing. And God said, F this. I'm going to give the 12 steps to humanity. And I'm going to give it to alcoholics first, because if this alcoholics can do it, anybody can. But if someone pops up in your life that needs 12-step help, you can do it. Okay? And you want to read these three. This is the Holy Grail for me. Okay, the persistence of this illusion, of those things I just read, the persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. Okay? For her, the persistence of this illusion to be that it's okay to be that angry and rageful and homicidal, suicidal, the persistence of this illusion is astonishing. She was pursuing it into the gates of insanity or death. She learned that she had to fully concede to her innermost selves that she was really angry. She was suicidal and she was homicidal. That's the first step. It's insane to live that way. It's a lead role in a cage to live that way. The 12 steps open the door. Okay? So really quick on the second step. Before I came to believe a power greater than myself would restore me to sanity, I came to believe you guys believe that. And when I believe you guys knew how to stay sober. I believe you guys relied on a power greater than yourselves. There was no dogmatic theology here. It's an open door. The door opens from the side you're on. Walk on part. And when I got here, you know, I had the unbreakable, unshakable love of God as a child. I had disdain for God. If there was a God, God was some kind of joke by the end of my drinking days. And when I got here and saw the 12 steps, it was like a doorway to a spiritual life. And it didn't take a whole long time. Well, it probably took a few decades. It took a while to see this as God's gift to humanity and gave it to alcoholics first. Because if we could do it, anybody can. But I believe that, and I could. Acceptance is an answer to all my problems, I think it says in the big book, Dr. Paul's thing. And to me, solutions are the answers to all my problems. Acceptance is the answer to all my disturbances. Because if I'm disturbed, my mind is blocked. I'm in a lead role in a cage if I'm disturbed, right? How to get out of that, okay? So when I'm disturbed, I got to size it up. Is it a problem or a condition? My physiology is a condition. The sun's going to explode someday. That's a condition. It doesn't bother me at all, okay? If something's disturbing me that there is a solution, then it is a problem. And go forward with grace, with your higher power, and so on. I'm writing a book. I started identifying this way when I started the meeting. I get called on. I'm Billy. I'm an alcoholic. I'm willing to grow along spiritual lines. I've been willing to grow along spiritual lines for a long time. And if you ask me how I'm doing, I'm going to tell you I'm sailing the breath of God. Okay? And I'm writing a book, I think. It's in God's hands and in God's time. I'm writing a book, Sailing the Breath of God, where I can just get this stuff out there. But thanks for the chance to share. I love being here. I love the Freedom Group. Almost any good excuse to get over here with some fudge, I'm happy to. And thanks for your hospitality. P.S. I love to drink. But I'm an alcoholic, so drink water.